You're listening to Money Never Sleeps Radio. In your face.
What we got here is a failure to communicate.
Oh, have I got your attention now?
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
You know what I mean?
Money to be made in a place like this.
Money never sleeps, pal.
You're crazy. Don't run when you lose. Don't whine when it hurts.
You know what it takes to sell real estate?
It takes brass, 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 brass.
I'm falling, and I can't get up.
All right, welcome to Money Never Sleeps. This is the show where we talk about anything and everything that impacts the flow of money from around the corner to around the world. And this should be an interesting show. I'm going to start out with private equity. All right, if you're familiar with the financial markets, you'll know what private equity firms do. They're evolving into private credit firms in part. They're creating funds and the like, and they're taking advantage of the opportunities that are out there. Now, understand, typically, you had banks, which are regulated in the lending part of things. And they're restricted from doing certain things, while the private equity firms, well, they have the ability to work across everything from mezzanine financing to distressed debt and more. And that's why the private credit markets are opening up with private equity firms, because they're able to do things typically a bank would have to jump through hoops to do. And that is what makes it interesting. This started to really, really open up last year in 2024. It's continuing this year, and it's going to go beyond 2025 because there's an appetite for it. There's a need for it. You have companies out there, individuals and the like, that are in need of capital infusions to do a thing, right? So if you go to a bank, you have to fill out paperwork, go through hoops, everything else, where a private equity firm that has a private equity fund may have different requirements that would allow you to actually move forward. Okay, you know, it may be them, you know, holding the debt on your company or whatever the case may be. However that may look, there's a different opportunity there. That's why those markets are going to continue to grow, because there's a need. You know, no one wants to go through the regulatory loopholes constantly. And the Trump administration coming in is going to potentially loosen that up. And it's going to allow the likes of J.P. Morgan, of Bank of America, of you know, other banks, other lending facilities that are under the regulatory umbrella to actually open up a little bit. And that's going to be interesting. The one thing that banks have to adhere to, and this is you need to know this too, the one thing that banks have to adhere to that PE firms don't, and that is a stress test. Now, we knew this from 2008, right? They put the banks under this heavy stress, and they do it today still, because they want to make sure you can survive a downturn. You could survive if something should go wrong. So if things go wrong at any given time, at some point, the bank can weather the storm. Private equity firms don't have that in place, because they're not on the same path as a bank, right? The BlackRocks, KKRs, Bain's, Carlyle Groups, they have the wherewithal to survive a downturn, there's no question. But not all PE firms are built the same. Not all PE firms would have the ability to survive a downturn, right? So, you know, remember that private credit, But private credit, that arena could be extremely profitable over time. That's why the private equity firms like doing it, and they're more so getting into it, because it can bring in a lot of revenue while it allows them to go take a little riskier bets elsewhere. And this is big, but it hasn't been tested to the point that it needs to, that if something went sideways for a bit, would these funds survive it? Some of these firms or funds might find themselves backed into a corner potentially. Now, will this happen anytime soon? Probably not. I'm bringing this up as a what if. Because when you think about the what if and you prepare for the what if, you are prepared for whatever you're going to be going through, right? And if a private equity firm is involved in the private credit markets and they are prepared to deal with something, a downturn, and they have their own internal stress test, they're going to be the big winners. And I know that BlackRock has it, KKR has it, Carlyle Group has it. They're doing this because they don't like taking losses. No one likes taking losses. I don't like taking losses. But, you know, so how do you avoid that? You mitigate the risk. Okay. So, again, do I see this happening anytime soon? Probably not. And these are pretty smart people at the helm. And within the in-betweens of these firms. And anyway, I think it's something to look at. And I believe that they have looked at it. I don't think it's been spoken about publicly enough. And I think that that narrative should probably change. Now, the M&A landscape is expanding across all industries. You see it. Just turn on the news. You're going to see something happening. There's an appetite for deals. And again, in private equity, you know, it's about the deal, right? And we're not just talking about any deals, but the right deals that work. So these private equity, these private credit facilities, they come in handy in the realm of private equity, right? When it allows for a quick turnaround and closing deals and the time frame needed as opposed to figuring out the financing after the fact. You know, some of these credit facilities, you know, can be pricey. You know, it all depends on what's happening. You know, but if you handle the deal properly, it could work out. There are a number of ways to go about funding an acquisition, right? There are a number of ways of structuring a deal, okay, and making it work. There's equity, pure equity. You go in, it's a pure stock deal. You know, we'll just call it a stock deal, stock for stock, and that's all. That's it. It's done, right? And then you have an all-cash deal, which is self-explanatory, right? You buy the company in one lump sum, and boom, there you have it. It's your company. And then you have a hybrid of both. It all depends on the company, if the company's public or private, and so on and so forth. In the realm of private equity, a leveraged buyout is a key path to completing an acquisition. It's always the best way to go about it. The man that pioneered this, I mean, he is iconic to me anyway. He's iconic in regards to the private equity space and the financial space in general. Okay, and that's Henry Kravis. He's a brilliant person. He refined it. He created a pathway that is used frequently today. All right, and that is, and that changed the whole scope of private equity, the whole scope. And he set a path for firms to follow through time and time and time again. Okay, and you know, again, still happening today, and it's going to continue to happen because it works. It's like inventing the wheel. You're not going to go to a square wheel. You're going to go with the round one because it works. This works. All right, another type of PE deal is a management buyout. Look, basically, this is when the management of a company, they want to go take over the company. Maybe they want to take it from being public to being private. And they partner with a PE firm to take the company private. This comes in handy when a company's true value isn't reflected in their stock price. And it happens. And it does happen because you may have things going on that you have to, you know, relay publicly that can deter you from that growth that you're needing. You know, it can be because of competition and so on and so forth, you know, but certain things kind of get in the way sometimes. Or another one is when a company is restricted from growth due to it being a public entity, right? You know, again, a number of things can fall into place that prevent them from growing. You know, it can be whatever. It can be regulatory. It can be, you know, their investors, their board preventing them from doing a thing, whatever the case may be. You know, take for instance Dell. Michael Dell, he took this company private. It is flourishing as a private entity. Okay, the probably one of the best things he could have done. Now, for high growth deals, you may see a private equity firm take a small piece of the company. They'll ride the tails of the company's growth with other investors, VCs, and the like. This spreads the risk and keeps the firm's capital open to new ventures. So they're not encumbering their reserves, their capital reserves for one particular deal. So it opens things up and it gets them involved in other deals and allows them to open up conversations, build relationships with other firms. So that's a vehicle for that. Some people, they look at venture capital as it's private equity. Guess what? It is not private equity. Two different animals. VCs normally hover around the early stage markets. They're hanging out there. You know, you may have a VC that just, they have their own capital. They put it to work. You know, you may have a trust fund. You may have someone that built their firm and they're looking at these early stage markets. And getting in early, I mean, basically is, in a lot of cases, it could be the big win. However, VC is not just going to invest in one company, right? They'll invest in dozens of companies with hopes of one working out. All they need is one to work out to make everything worth it. And that's the reality of it. Now, some PE firms may do some of that, but that's not the core of their business. It is not the norm. It's very high risk. It's a high risk investment. And a PE's risk tolerance is calculated and not left to chance at most times. You know, even when you're going for bigger deals, you know, you want to make sure that you're making a calculated risk assessment to avoid losing on the deal, right? Now, the area that to me is most interesting is distressed buyouts. You have PE firms that are really, really good operators. They know how to build companies. They can sniff out distressed deals. And they come forward with a vision to turn them around. These are the people you have to pay attention to. They can probably make an acquisition of a distressed asset, roll that into another company, or sell off the company for parts. It all depends on what they're doing. If they're buying the company, they're selling it for parts, that's going to cover their investment, put a little profit in their hands. Now look, if you've ever seen the original Wall Street from 87, okay, that's what he did. You buy the company, sell it for parts. You know, I'm not a big fan of that because people lose their jobs and everything. So if there's any possibility of going and preserving the company and turning it around to make it work, I'm always in favor of that. Either way, it is a calculated risk that has a lot of moving parts. Every firm does things differently. I'm just bringing this out so that, you know, our listeners can be more informed if they weren't already. Okay, I'm not speaking about any specific stocks or any specific companies on the show. I will probably do that in the near future. I just don't want to. I don't want to bring on a talk about certain deals, stock deals, unless there's something interesting to speak about, and I will get to that in future episodes. Now, the PE space is going to continue to evolve and grow as more capital bloats up the funds, the private credit markets. You know, as that bloats up, they will be looking for deals, and some of these deals may come at a premium. So you may have, you know, a bidding war for companies. You may have a company bid up higher than what it's actually worth for that reason. But as long as a PE firm, you have good operators there and they have the capital reserves to work with a deal, then they can make it work. So it's up to the PE firms to bet on the right horses. That's what it comes down to. In order for them to show their investors a profit, that's what it all, at the end, it comes down to the profit. You know, you have to show your investors profit with the funds that you're dealing with. And for the firms that are more like family offices, still, you don't want to lose. More so, you don't want to lose. That's your money, right? You want to be on the winning side of things. Okay, so anyway, that's it for the private equity part. I want to talk about crypto. I'm jumping into the space on the show, and I'm going to continue to do that in future episodes, because I've seen too much of the bad things that are happening out there, and there's all this stuff that's going on. I need to address this on the show, and that makes me feel better, because I hope that if I'm able to go and give one person some information that can help them make an informed decision, then the show's worth it to me. Before I go into speaking about crypto, I just want to share something with you guys. I had it on my last show, going to have it here. We'll have it on future episodes, because I think that it deserves this place to be heard. And I think that the financial community should learn more about this blockchain. So just hang on, just take 2 minutes to listen to this, and we'll go right into crypto right after it.
Hiku Novus is a next generation layer 1 blockchain network designed for speed, scalability, and security while maintaining decentralization and efficiency. Built for enterprise and institutional adoption, Hiku Novus provides a robust infrastructure for high-speed transactions, asset tokenization, and decentralized applications across multiple industries, including finance, healthcare, real estate, and supply chain management. Now let's talk about some of the key features of Hiku Novus. First is the speed and scalability. Hiku Novus is designed to handle a high volume of transactions per second, making it suitable for financial and industrial applications. Enterprises can deploy private Layer 2 blockchain networks on Hiku Novus to enhance efficiency, security, and compliance while leveraging the benefits of decentralization. Next, we have security and transparency. Hiku Novus has integrated security protocols, including AI-driven threat detection and encryption, which ensure secure transactions and data integrity. Transactions on Hiku Novus are permanently recorded on a decentralized ledger, enhancing transparency and trust. Let's touch on asset tokenization and smart contracts. Tokenization of real-world assets on Hiku Novus is made simple. Businesses and institutions can tokenize assets such as real estate, private equity stakes, intellectual property, bonds, stocks, commodities, and other financial products, unlocking liquidity and new financial opportunities. This can be done either on Hiku Novus directly or via a private or public Layer 2 blockchain. This works well for transfer agents that work with vast numbers of clients for their stock or bond records. Hiku Novus enables automated, trustless transactions through customizable smart contracts, reducing operational costs and counterparty risks. Embedded within the Hiku Novus system is a proprietary escrow system that can be used across all digital assets created on the Hiku Novus blockchain and even Layer 2 blockchains. Next is regulatory compliance and enterprise integration. Institutions can deploy their own Layer 2 blockchain networks on Hiku Novus and have built-in compliance features to meet regulatory standards. With support for FIX APIs, OTC trading desks, and financial integrations, Hiku Novus caters to the needs of financial institutions, hedge funds, and private equity firms. Hiku Novus is built for growth, and it's been proven through platforms being built utilizing the blockchain, such as the MChatHive Super App and the decentralized digital asset swapping platform Hootex. Innovation is at the core of Hiku Novus and is built for growth, security, scalability, and mass adoption. Another key element is Vinci. The smallest denomination of the native token of the Hiku Novus blockchain Piku, this enables precision in micropayments, smart contract transactions, and developer tools. The future is very bright for Hiku Novus, with innovation being at the forefront. So please join us on this journey of growth and discovery.
If you've been in tune, not if you ever, but if you've been in tune over the past few days, then you would have heard about a few things. First, the hack of the crypto exchange Bybit, okay, to the tune of $1.5 billion U.S., with most of that being in ETH. That caused the boat to rock a bit. Now, take that alongside the Argentine President Milei and that clown that's hovering around him right now, as he inadvertently tatted a meme coin called Libra. Now, did he mean to do it? I doubt it. He probably somebody told him, you know, just talk about this. And he said, all right, I'll go on Twitter and I'll say something. Yay, and I do it because I have 3 million plus followers and, you know, I'm doing something for my country. Well, you know, he was wrong. It caused the token, the Libra token, to fly out of control. And then basically, like all meme coins, you wind up having a massive rug pull, with over 86% of the investors losing big. You know, from what I understand, that token went, I don't know, the market cap was like 3 or 4 billion, something in that realm. And, you know, I mean, that's to me, is just, I'm going to go into that in a second. It just bothers me that this even exists out there and it's allowed to happen. Okay. Now, between that and the events with the political speculation and everything that's going on, look, this drove Bitcoin below 88,000 as of this show. And it took a majority of the altcoins, such as Ethereum, Avalanche, Pupinova, Solana, and took them along for the ride on the downside. Now, before I go into my views on each, this is what I want to talk about, is about the meme coin frenzy. To me, it is nothing short of a pump and dump scheme. That this is the stuff that happened in the 90s, the 2000s, where you had promoters that were pumping stock, and then you're using bulletin boards. Now you're using Telegram and other social media. The reality is that it is happening, and this is happening today in crypto. It's the same thing, just different elements and different tools being utilized, right? And that's what's happening there. The difference is that, look, you know, with you're pumping and you have a pump and dump with a stock, you know, there's some type of regulation there. There's something going on there, right? So with that said, you know, at least there's some type of, you know, some guardrails there somewhere. I mean, you may get rooked and you may lose your money, but doesn't mean that, you know, you still don't have a voice. You know, the way I see it, if you're investing in a stock or in a crypto, you need to be vigilant. You need to make informed decisions. Just don't jump in. Look at what's going on. If you're getting involved in a crypto, go look at what it's about. Look at what's built on it. I mean, if it's a blockchain, look at it. Look at what's going on with it. Look at what's built on it. Look at how it functions. You know something? You may be holding on the reins of something fantastic. Now, meme coins, well, you know, that's a different animal than a stock scam, right? Is it? It's a little worse. I'm going to tell you why. Because meme coins, they hold zero value. It's like holding a collectible. But, you know, if I'm going to hold a digital collectible, I would rather have an NFT. Because at least an NFT is a one of a kind, or at worst, is one of a few in a series. There, you can have some intrinsic value over time. No matter what it is, it's digital ownership of something. A meme coin, it is a token that has millions of tokens. Where's the collection there? You know, where's the novelty? It is a novelty, but where is the value? It has no dedicated blockchain, right? No utility. No other application for it. It may be used in a video game or something, but other than that, nothing. Nothing to be built on it. It's basically a tool that you have promoters that use it for scams, you know, and for rug pulls, or whatever you want to call it. Scam, rug pull, it's the same thing, where investors are taken for billions, and that is what bothers me. Investors being taken for billions. Where you have the crypto space, where there's a lot of innovation, a lot of great things happening here. This right here, this is the shit that shouldn't exist. Excuse my language, but it shouldn't exist, and it's going to take the crypto community to have guardrails. If you have guardrails, you make people accountable for these meme coins being created, I guarantee you things are going to change. Things will change, and you'll see it, and it's going to happen. If these blockchains want to survive, and they're allowing meme coins to be built on them, they're going to put guardrails in place. Okay, and you know, Pikunovis has already done that, and I'll go into that another time. All right, but we have seen so many meme coins skyrocket, leave investors literally crying at their computers because they lost it all. They lost it all, especially those that use leverage. Ouch. They use leverage to get involved in these. That can mean a total loss, not just a paper loss, right? a total loss. But if a meme coin goes from $5 to a penny, you know, that's as close as a total loss as you're going to get. And what else can be done there? At least with Dogecoin, it was a meme coin, but it had a blockchain, and that is the difference. That's the difference, people. That's the difference. It wasn't built on anything. It had its own blockchain, and that's why it has this life to it, and it'll continue to live because some smart people will figure out what to do with it. Now, a majority of these meme coins, even though people think that they're created on Ethereum, they're being created on Solana. And that is where I see the crack in that foundation. There are no guardrails or anything that prevents any fool from going and creating a meme coin. Somebody can wake up and say, I'm going to go create this meme coin. I got my fees that I can pay for this, and I'm going to get this listed on an exchange, blah, blah, blah. Okay, now, can they do it? Sure they can. They pay for it. They do it. They create it. They pay for it. Then they run it on a decentralized or on a centralized exchange. And think, you know, the question is definitely going to come up as to why would exchanges pick it up in the first place, right? Well, that's because it's easy. And I'm going to tell you why. If they have Solana on there already, it's the same coding, just a different symbol. It's just adding that symbol. They don't need to do anything additional. It just brings it on. Now, the singular thing is where I see Solana potentially having a massive issue. If they don't put guardrails in place, they need it. Okay, you know, there is the Melania and the Trump token. Also, other meme coins that had similar results. They fell. People got hurt. Right? Discontinuation will impact the price of the token. And I'm talking about Solana. That's much as certain because, you know, you have all this activity. Yeah, you may be getting activity on your blockchain, but it can bring other implications, you know, because the reality is that plausible deniability is not going to work here. You know, I'm saying it here. You know what's happening. Do something about it. Don't allow it to happen. Okay, protect the general public. This is how you promote global inclusion, not this way. No one, you know, because the trust factor is going to come in, right? Something's built on a chain, and, you know, all this fraud is happening. All of a sudden, oh, my God, I don't know if I should trust them. And that's look, people just need to be aware of all of that because it is important. And again, I am talking about this because I believe it's that important. And I believe that trying to inform investors, whether it's in stocks or crypto or private equity, whatever the case may be, if they should need it, it's information you can utilize to put in your holster, okay, to protect yourselves. That's the best you can do, is protect yourself as much as possible. Okay, you don't want to lose opportunities, right? You don't want to be such a cynic that, oh my God, I can't do this, and this is gonna go, and everything's gonna go, and you're the naysayer of it all. No. Crypto market is going to continue to grow. Just bet on the right projects. That's it. That's what I'm saying. Bet on the right projects. Sit there. Don't be a trader of sorts. Sit there and hold and believe. If you believe, it's going to happen. Now, Bitcoin is going down. Now, I mean, again, it was below 88,000 as of this show. But the going down is a buying opportunity. It's always a buying opportunity. Dollar cost averaging and the like, institutions jumping in, going to get the, you know, some cheap Bitcoin, getting lower prices to bring their overall cost basis down, which actually helps the overall company. You know, like I guarantee you, MicroStrategy is doing some deals, or Strategy as they call them. You know, the sale is doing some deals there to get more, and it's not ridiculous. You're bringing your cost basis down. The more you bring it down, as Bitcoin will go up, and I see Bitcoin probably, you know, going to 200 grand inside of the next, you know, 18 months. That should happen, and all of a sudden, you know, let's say with MicroStrategy or with Strategy, let's say their cost basis, you know, winds up being, you know, in the mid 80,000s. Okay. And it's at 150. You think that company is not going to be valued more? Of course it is. Of course it is. But, you know, which, you know, when if you believe in something and a buying opportunity comes in, you're going to jump in. You hear a lot of people say, don't buy, wait. What are you waiting for? You're waiting for the sun to come up, the sun to go down, the wind to blow the right way. You're doing a litmus test. Yeah, if you believe in something, you're going to jump on it. Okay? And a lot of traders, and with Bitcoin going down, okay, the issue here is not Bitcoin itself. It's leveraging. A lot of traders leverage their digital assets to day or week trade because they think they're smarter than the average bear. They're doing this and they're making money. The problem is when things turn sideways, they go. It happens very quickly. They you know, some traders, they'll go and they'll leverage, jump into meme coins, and boom, things go the wrong way. They're wiped out. Or maybe they go and they get in early and they're part of the rug pull, right? And they make out. So, you know, it all depends on what's happening. And this is where the leveraging, make no mistake, this is where the biggest gains or the biggest losses come into play. It will cause downturns in the crypto market, no question. Same as with, you know, the thing is, this is different than the stock market, okay? Because, you know, you can leverage in stocks, right? But you're using margin, which means that you gotta bring in the cash, or the firm is going to sell you out, and they won't sell to the open market because they don't want to hurt their other customers. They'll deal with an institution and do it privately. So when you are in the crypto space, you don't have that. So it's going to always cause downturns when there shouldn't be any downturns. Like Bitcoin shouldn't be driven down to this level, but it is. And that's part of the problem, okay, where I believe that lending protocols need to be under some regulatory framework, not heavy regulation, but some framework, because such as the stock brokerage firms, you know, they can offer margin trading, as I just mentioned, right? They work with a regulatory framework. So crypto lending protocols, they should do the same, because too many investors are getting hurt chasing after the easy money. Guess what? Easy money doesn't exist. You may get lucky a couple times, but traders, they lose more often than they win. Even though the wins are big, but you'll take some losses. You know, any trader that says they don't lose, they're lying to you. They are lying to you, right? Now, I want to talk about Pico Novus. You know, took a little slide over the last 72 hours, so around 91. But slowly but surely, since that low, it crept back up to over 94. It's just trading well. The value for the Pico token is not only that it's a native token of a layer one blockchain, but because of the blockchain itself, the advanced components of that blockchain, and the platforms that are integrated into Pico Novus, into their systems. You know, they go and they, you know, basically, you have Pico Novus, the blockchain, integrated into their systems, and there are a lot of things going on there. That is only going to increase tremendously as we roll through 2025, due to customized platforms integrating both AI, blockchain, utilizing Pico Novus, but also integrating other technology. Okay, within these platforms for these industries. It's going to be an exciting time. The value of the blockchain hasn't shined yet, but once exchanges and institutions learn more about it, there are institutions involved now, but once that is more so, there's zero question they will bring it to higher levels. You know, this could lead to ETFs or ETPs in the near future, but to me, the utility is the name of the game. Look, XRP has serious utility, but Ripple builds with it. So if you see companies building with it, guess what? There's value there. XRP hasn't seen its value. How it came about and what they did and everything else, that's always in question. But if you're looking at the value of the blockchain and what they do, that's where you're going to find the gold. And you know, as it goes on, more people are going to look into it. You know, don't believe the hype and all these people saying it's going to go to 10,000 and all this other stuff. You know, do I think it should go higher? Yeah, I think it's going to find its space. It's going to have a nice market cap, and you know, you're going to have more groups building with it. It should be interesting. You know, so building with the blockchain is key. The value, that is the whole game, period, the end. Okay, now, I'm going to end this show with another bright note in the crypto space. All right, Robinhood, they settled their crypto investigation with the SEC. Wait a second. Let me correct myself. They didn't settle it. It was dismissed, gone, tossed out. This is good for Robinhood. It's good for Coinbase too. This will set the stage for Robinhood to jump further into the crypto space. And of course, as I mentioned, I wouldn't be shocked if Coinbase started doing a crossover to add stocks and other types of trading beyond crypto and investments and so on and so forth. It's the evolution of finance, people. And unless you've been sleeping for the past 3 years, okay, you're seeing it. This is the future. It's inevitable. And it's going to set the stage for where financial markets will be. And that's it for this segment of Money Never Sleeps Radio. I want to thank you for tuning in, taking the time to hear my rants. But, you know, I'm trying to help the investment community. I'm trying to help those that may need some input. Doing that so that you can gain something from it. And this is why I do this show. As you see, we don't have advertisements on air and the like, because that's not what the show is about. We're trying to do something positive. And by having the platform to do it, I think we're doing some good. Anyway, I want to thank you for tuning in, and I hope that you guys have a great trading day, whether you're trading stocks, crypto, bonds, whatever you're doing. Okay, make the most of it. And we'll be back with you with another episode of Money Never Sleeps Radio. Thank you again.
Initiating shutdown sequence.
You're listening to UCW Radio in your face.
What is your major malfunction?
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on Money Never Sleeps Radio are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial advice. The host, Louis Belafkef, and guests of Money Never Sleeps Radio are not licensed financial advisors, and any investment decisions made based on information presented in this podcast are at the listener's own risk. Listeners are encouraged to consult with a qualified financial advisor or investment professional before making any investment decisions. The podcast hosts and guests do not endorse or recommend any specific investment strategies or products. All investments involve risk, and past performance is not indicative of future results.